Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Welcome to a second hour here on Circles of Change. It's always great fun to have in-studio guests, which we're going to continue with today. Welcoming Marie Wesselhoff. How are you this morning, Marie?
Good, Zara. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a real pleasure. Now, this is my friend who you're going to hear, listeners, who has done a very wide path of career opportunities, from large corporations to going back to school again, and then now being a serial entrepreneur and being involved in the startup world. So let me set the stage. Marie is, she's president and co-founder of MSDX, a Tucson-based company commercializing both research use only and in vitro diagnostic blood test products for brain disease. In fact, a non-invasive patent-pending approach known as the window into the brain. Multiple sclerosis is their first focus, ultimately then to provide technology to monitor patients with traumatic brain injury, Parkinson's disease, and chronic fatigue. Marie has 30-plus years of healthcare business experience with a successful track record in the diagnostic and device industry. She held positions such as Vice President and General Manager, VP of Marketing, Area VP of Sales and Operations, and also Product Manager during her 20-year career that spanned Cardinal, Allegiance, Baxter, and American Hospital. In her role as General Manager of the Scientific Products, she was responsible for an $850 million diagnostic business, including the management of some 120 salespeople and 20 marketing organization individuals. So throughout her career, she's had multiple opportunities then to reposition a business or a department, launch $100 million product lines, negotiate partnership agreements, manage key accounts, and as well as facilitate the integration of teams for acquisitions and divestitures. Marie graduated from the University of Wisconsin with a B.S. in medical technology. She also attended the University of Chicago's Business School and the University of Arizona McGuire Center for Entrepreneurship, where, by the way, she later became their director of the U of A's Business Incubator Program, working with high-tech startups. So, as I said, a true blue serial entrepreneur based off a large company career path. And so to go from having been in large companies back to school and then find yourself now, you know, being the coach of others with the idea generation machine, it must have been a very fulfilling time for you.
Fulfilling, but also a little nerve-wracking.
I would say scary.
Trying to figure out what I needed to know in the, you know, in kind of a new environment.
Right. And before, for any of us that shift from large companies that are used to having the infrastructure or just 911 to the IT department, suddenly you don't have that anymore.
Exactly. We always say in entrepreneur, it takes a community to raise a company, because you certainly don't have it all within, you know, your own organization.
And in fact, that's usually your fun of your best ideas is when you don't have it in
right,
your organization,
right.
isn't yep. it? So tell us the story of MSDX. I mean, what a fabulous venture you're on right now.
Yeah. So MSDX, as you'd mentioned, we're working, you had a lot of fancy words.
Exactly.
At the end of the day, it's a blood test to help monitor patients that are living with multiple sclerosis to help them know whether their therapy is working. And so that's what we're working on, because there's nothing that exists today. So, the whole area of brain disease is without a lot of tools to help people understand what's going on, what they should be doing to change. And I've been in this area my entire career. And it was amazing to me that we haven't made the kind of breakthroughs that we need to, and hence why I'm there.
So that would be the common thread that's across all these spaces, then, is brain disease for you.
Yes, exactly, okay. Exactly, brain disease. That's one common thread, and the other are simple blood testing tools. It's much easier to get a blood test than it is to get an MRI or to get a spinal tap.
Well, in that regard, the technology has made a lot of advances over the years. Now, the whole idea, too, of startups collaborating into this field, of course, with the cost of healthcare becoming what it has been, what better place to be really doing innovative work?
Right. You know, it's interesting because the theme of, healthcare, a lot can be done in these large companies, and I just feel very blessed to have spent the kind of time I did in large corporations. But, you know, really breakthrough stuff can't happen at big organizations. They can't take the kind of risk. It's, too financially based. And so I found myself at a time where I knew I wanted to be involved in really earlier stage innovation. in. And it wasn't going to happen. I can remember I was at a strategic plan presenting to very senior management, and I looked him in the eye, and I was presenting all these great ideas. And I said, you know, I'm a shareholder. They can't do this. This is not correct of me to be presenting these kinds of things. And so I had to have the guts to say, okay, where can this kind of stuff be done? And hence it resulted in a career change for me.
Which is dramatic. I mean, it's one thing, though, it's a great opportunity for you to get anchored and go back to school and join an entrepreneurial program to kind of let those neurons connect. But, you know, if I might suspect that you were probably running with a much younger crowd of colleagues, right?
Exactly.
So the idea of being a returning student when you probably had years more experience even over some of the professors.
Yep. It was humbling.
It was humbling, yes. And you know what? But I always say, because I did one of those situations earlier in life too, it was great because I was happy to delegate all the spreadsheet management stuff to these young upshots that already had the digital know-how, you know, the digital natives.
Well, in the land of startup, there's no delegating. I remember being in Eller, University of Arizona has a great entrepreneurship program. I have to do a little infomercial.
Absolutely.
The McGuire Center for Entrepreneurship. And I remember sitting in class and everybody had their computers on and no one was looking at the teacher, the professor. That's how old I am. I'm calling him a teacher. So no one was looking at the professor. And so I was like, how rude. And so it took me a while to get back in the groove of, you know, what it was like to be going to class. And I think my biggest obstacle was thinking that I knew too much. Mm-hmm. You know, I had to step back and say, well, yeah, I do know some good things. Which things need to go with me and which things do I need to get rid of and get out of the way so I can make some room for some new things that I need to learn in a new environment?
And that is profound advice for anyone who's making a major shift, whether it be because you have to or because you want to, is, you know, what set of clothes do I leave in the closet, or what uniform do I no longer put on? It's humbling. It's also letting go of a big piece of your identity, wasn't it?
Exactly. And that's why I use the word humbling, because there were some times when I felt like I could probably teach that class. And then I said, oh my God, you know, I've got to step back and really be open. But it does, when I am as old as I am, I always say that, you know, when I've been around, you know, there isn't the same ego thing involved.
Right.
You know, you don't need to prove anything anymore. So it makes that a little bit easier to step away and let the new learnings, kind of like what Mark was talking about earlier.
So the idea of getting exposed to this technology with MSDX, you know, we mentioned that you took a segue move then to actually be part of the Arizona U of A's technology park. Was this an idea that was nucleating within that community, and they thus then scooped you up, or you scooped them up?
Well, you know, the land of startup, I call it a mosaic.
Yes.
So instead of having one job, you learn to figure out how you have multiple things going on. And one of my coaches at that time called it a mosaic, and I said, oh, I like that word. And so after finishing school, then, you know, I could do a couple of things at the same time. So I was working with one other startup. I went on to be the director of the incubator out at the University of Arizona Science and Technology Park.
Okay.
And so help them kind of relaunch that incubator. And at the same time, I could have time to launch the business that we just talked about in Eller. And so I could do a couple of things at the same time. So I could, in one day, do things that I knew, and another part of the day I could learn. So I could get both going at the same time.
So you have the clue day and the
clueless
day.
All within the same day.
All within the same day, exactly.
Yeah.
So again, this ties us back to that whole opportunity of learning. So the team that you've got assembled today with MSDX, share with us about your team.
Yeah. So first, the founding team. The founding team came out of that program. But when everybody graduated, a lot of people needed to move on and get jobs. You know, they were younger, like you had said, than I was. And so the founders stayed very involved. You know, there was one of the founders was a biosystems engineer, and another one was an IT guy, and another one
cross-functional
side. Right. They went off, and then we had to start hiring people that had the kind of skills that we needed. And so, you know, we have a director of research, Dr. Ram Nayak, and he joined us. He'd been at Harvard and University of Arizona and the Joslin Diabetes Center all sorts of things. And then he kind of drank the Kool-Aid, you know, so he too, came on board. And then we had another person join our team to head up development development, and he'd come from large companies like Becton Dickinson.
Sure.
So there's a bit of a theme. You know, it's mm-hmm. people who've done things for larger organizations before, but are ready to reposition their knowledge in a new area.
Well, the other thing, of course, is they then bring all this bridging
exactly.
networks and people, so that when you folks have to go forward for investing, you've got a team that's
yep.
rock solid and carries the reputation.
So our team is a group of six people. So, you know, before I'd worked for 35,000 people and now six. And so we have a controller, and we have regulatory and quality, and then marketing. And so that's our team today. And then we have a really good board. And then, interestingly enough, you know, when you're a startup company, you also have investors. So, you know, we have 25 investors so far, and they do more than just provide us, you know, some capital over time, but they have a lot of expertise.
Expertise, absolutely. In fact, you seed your board intentionally yep. for that type yep. of opportunity. So the path, Marie, for MSDX then, you're in the various phases mm-hmm. of approval process, I assume, for your products. And do you envision this is one that's destined to want to gear up a whole manufacturing capability wherever that might be? Or will it be something you see maybe you'll get scooped up and acquired by one of these bigger companies that nonetheless wouldn't have had that kernel of innovation to start
yeah,
with?
A little bit of both.
Okay.
So I think you hit it. You know, what does the timeline look like? You know, we've already been at this for 4 years. So, right. you know, for people who haven't done it, it's not for the faint of heart.
You got it.
You know, so the first year we started with the technology, and after a year and a half found out that it wasn't going to be commercially feasible. So we had to start again with our own. It takes years to get through development. You know, we already have $1.5 million into the mm-hmm. company thus far. And so now we have to start down more clinical studies.
Great.
So there are another couple of years before we make it through FDA. So by the time we're actually out and in the market with an FDA-cleared product, it could probably be about 7 years and a lot of money.
And a lot of money.
Right.
But you say, though, that's exactly the path of innovation that
right.
happens specifically in healthcare and pharma.
Right, particularly in a regulated environment like we are.
And justifiably regulated,
right.
when we're talking about human
safety
lives.
Safety and efficacy.
But as you said, you've followed the path of multiple sclerosis as an example for over 30 years, mm-hmm. and to know it's a disease, it's an affliction, it has various gradients of difficulty in people's lives. Also, it's kind of a north of the latitude, right, as you and I had talked about beforehand.
Right, right. You know, you're kind of getting at why did we pick brain disease? So let me just spend a minute on that. You know, while I've been in healthcare my entire career, both in hospitals and then in industry, I've had a chance to work on cardiac markers. So today, if you go into an emergency room and you think you might have a heart attack, there's a test that everybody takes. I was part of launching that mm-hmm. years ago. And so that's been exciting, but this, you know, the area of brain disease just hadn't been cracked yet. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we're working on this now. And, you know, the reason why it hasn't is because it's difficult. You know, that's why it takes as long as it does. So I've always been in this market space, but just recently in brain diseases, and I'm very committed to getting this done.
Well, what's so exciting then for the timing for you from a personal standpoint, of course, is all the breakthroughs that are happening now
yes.
in understanding of
yep.
the working of the brain, able to continue learning. I mean, even the fact that now the university settings are renaming themselves. They're no longer
right.
called the Center on Aging. They're called the Center on Longevity.
Right, right.
So
there's
a compliment.
They're flipping it to a more positive.
Well, and also it probably stems from all of us baby boomers that are all about wanting to continue our life in new ways
right.
and make sure our diet, our energy, our lifestyle mm-hmm. can complement that. But then on the other hand, of course, as you said, there are those that are left behind because they fundamentally carry a disease.
Right. And you know, in the area of neurology, which is the study of different aspects of brain disease, in this case that where we're focused, you know, you had mentioned we're working on potentially Parkinson's and traumatic brain injury and Alzheimer's and multiple sclerosis. Why did we pick MS first? And you know, part of that has to do with commercial feasibility.
Correct.
In MS, there are 8 approved therapies now today. You know, so whereas Alzheimer's and some of the other diseases don't have those kind of choices, MS does. And so to have these kinds of tools mm-hmm. helps that patient know whether they're on the right therapy. So we chose that one first because having this information could help arm people
yes.
in having actionable decision making and making certain that they're on the right therapy.
Yeah, that's right. Marie, this whole stepping into the abyss, I'll call it, from the structured corporate world to the entrepreneurial one. Do you think, though, there were other elements in how you were raised or your personal upbringing or things you did outside the work world, so to speak, your 5 to 9 life, that spoke about that entrepreneurial spirit that you had?
Mm-hmm. You know, even in a large corporate environment, I've always wanted to be involved with projects that had to do with starting something. So even when I was in a hospital, you know, shortly after I had started my career, there was a brand new hospital that was starting up. So I could launch and open a whole new clinical lab in a hospital, in a Humana hospital. Then I felt like, oh, this isn't large enough, so I wanted to go into industry. So, you know, I've always worked even in those large organizations on launching a new product.
And my guess is when it comes to the point in time when things are starting to get stable or sustainable, I'm out of here.
Right,
next
right.
one, give me
right.
the next challenge.
Right.
And you'll either create it or it will find you.
Right. Yeah, I always say I'm not a dream maker, I'm a dream catcher. So if there's something out there, I like to take it and then figure out how to make it happen. And then, you know, some of the detail and the process orientation of bringing it all the way through, you know, I'm ready to be on to the next one.
I love that. You're a Midwesterner.
I am.
You went to education and so on, your early life experience. And then you came here to the Southwest.
Mm-hmm.
Differences in how people are wired thinking, the fertileness for entrepreneurial activity here vis-a-vis other places you've worked? Any thoughts on that?
Lots of differences between the Midwest and here. You know, the whole pace is totally different. You know, in terms of fertileness for launching these kind of companies, I think out here, you know, everybody doesn't think they know the answer.
Well put.
So in the Midwest, you know, they're kind of, you know, we got it, we know what we're doing, you know, but more so in the Southwest, there's an openness. There aren't a lot of large companies, and so there are far more early stage companies out here. And what an amazing hotbed of material to commercialize the University of Arizona.
Right,
I mean, there's so much going on. So the ability to take stuff out of the university that's been discovered and bring it into the market, I've noticed more here than I actually had back in the Midwest.
The other flip side of that, though, is how lucky MSDX and U of A was even to attract someone like you, though, who would come in, because you know what it looks like on the other side. So it's one thing to generate all the ideas, but to get it through the commercial phases and know the business nuances of it, not everyone can do that.
And, you know, that's one thing about, you know, being a community that has a lot of snowbirds. You know, there are a lot of people who have exited their careers in their 50s and aren't done.
Right. Exactly.
And so, you know, you look at our team. Our team has been in large organizations. They were ready for something new. I think Tucson has a lot of that kind of talent. And so when you take ideas generated from something like the University of Arizona and combine them with the talent that's here because they moved here because they wanted a different kind of lifestyle.
Right.
You know, you really have the ingredients to get these kind of things done.
And the other thing is you also have people who are looking for what I call almost a renaissance, and that is they want to go do something that might be tangentially the space they're familiar with, but something really big. And as I know, I see the fire in your eyes, the passion around helping people in need and combating disease.
Yeah, and I think everybody in their own way that's part of our team has lived in their own markets and said, wow, if only I could. And then everybody has their own way of finishing the sentence. And I think that, you know, when you pull those people together, that's what we're really after in MSDX. Because, you know, nobody has a full-time job with us. You know, so it takes a certain kind of individual that's willing to commit that many, you know, those years to getting this done.
Yeah, well put. So the timeline is something out there in a number of years. So what keeps your juices going on a day-to-day basis?
The unmet need in the market.
Unmet need
clearly
in the market.
Clearly,
exactly.
That's what it is. You know, even 2 weeks ago, I was out in L.A., 20,000 people at the blood testing market. It's called the in vitro diagnostic market. There wasn't a single test in MS on that whole floor.
Wow.
You know, there's diabetes, there's all this other. And so when you come back from that and you come back from a conference in MS and you know that they're ready, you know, that need is what keeps us going. Now we have to find a way to get more money.
And you know, it's important for our listeners to appreciate what you've just said, though. Some of your best intel can come from going to conferences where you were and seeing if there aren't other ideas that have been adopted for other diagnostic products that can play into yours.
Right, benchmarking. You know, what are the best practices out there? So, and that's part of why we go to the market. You know, what are the business models that are successful today? And you've got to figure out, because what was successful 10 years ago is not what's going to get us there. And you've got to go figure out what's working now.
Well, and I actually think that you probably also need to go figure out what will work that hasn't even been there yet. Because even some of the models that are today, I mean, look at what the social media market has done in the whole field of marketing and advertising. Although, as you talk to companies more and they'll realize we can't forego some of the traditional marketing and advertising work we did, but it's in addition to.
Yeah, the breakthroughs in enabling technologies are critical to whether it's, you know, the marketing tools we use for market adoption, or you know, tools that we use in development to try to accelerate it. But you know, in the end, you know, every market, every company has its cycle. Mm-hmm. So you know, we've kind of gone through ups and downs, and you know, raising money in this environment is probably our number one challenge right now. You know, it's a tough time to be doing it, even though the technology is there. You know, getting out there and getting to the right people, because you know, the next round of capital is over $3 million, so it's not little. It's not trivial anymore. So now that's what we're working on.
Well, and having access to capital in a space of a disease that is so pervasive as MS, at least to use that as your foundation, mm-hmm. that is probably also a really important place to launch from.
Yep.
What's going on globally in this particular market? Are there
tangents
in MS or in the you know, the non-invasive blood testing diagnostic work?
You know, and that kind of gets to what's, you know, what other technologies are out there? How do we compare to some of them? You know, there's a lot of work being done in imaging, you know, the different technologies for imaging brain, et cetera. And then, you know, there's starting to be other people working on blood testing products, and each person goes after a specific thing. Sometimes they're looking at tests to predict whether they will get MS. In some cases, they're looking to diagnose to see whether or not the patient. We're looking to have tools to monitor to make sure they're on the right therapy. These therapies cost $50,000 a year.
Right. That's
they're
exactly
not insignificant.
Well, and also to make sure they're on the right therapy, that it's helping them progress.
It's
and
quality
that
of life.
Maybe it's more than one therapy that we could bundle in a different way, and to have some guideposts rather than go try this for 6 weeks, then come back and we'll see if we need to tweak
because
the dial.
Because you might not know for a year.
Exactly.
So you want to make sure that the disease is being treated with the right therapy so that disability doesn't continue to progress.
That's right. Well, when I asked you to giving me a title segment for this one, you called it Dancing on the Edge. So tell me what you mean by that.
Well, you know, yours is something about when you have a creative path, you got to walk
on it,
or whatever
the
that was.
The path is created by walking on it.
Yes, exactly. So I love dance, you know, and so we all have our other, this is my creative spin. And so I thought, you know, I don't walk it, I dance it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you're in the area of innovation and pushing it, it's always on the edge. So hence Dancing on the Edge.
That's exactly right. Marie, how can individuals learn more about what your efforts are about?
MSDX.co.
Right.
And or give us a call. There are numbers are on our website. We'd love to share with you. We always need people in clinical studies. We need investing. Lots of ways to participate.
That's right. And the toll-free number is 888-647-MSDX, as a matter of fact, that you'd be welcome. And again, that's MSDX.co.
And come visit us at the U of A Science and Technology
Park. To have a good one. Well, Marie Wesselhoff, thank you so very much for joining us. It's a real pleasure, as always, to tap into people who aren't stopping, you know, by any stretch of the imagination, and you're continuing to dance.
Thank you, Sarah.
My pleasure.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.